welcome to 216, Link to the Past Randomizer podcast. I'm your host, Fury Agent, back with a Thursday episode. Today on the show, we have Oro. Had a really great conversation with Oro. Really loved hearing Oro's story and understanding things from their perspective. A lot of times I think I take for granted the idea that people have different perspectives on things, that people approach the game differently, that people have different just ideas on what they want out of the game. And hearing Oro's perspective kind of refreshed that for me, put it back into a different perspective. So very excited to get to that interview. We'll get to that shortly. Since this is a Thursday episode and I've already recapped kind of what's been going on this week, don't really want to go over any of that stuff. And, you know, reflecting back on the conversation that I have with Oro that you're about to hear just has me thinking about things just a little bit differently. The thing that that's kind of in my mind and in taking up my brain space right now is measuring success and how easy it is to quantify success with wins and losses, because it's easy. You win or you lose. And so if you win, you're successful, and you lose, you're not. But I think, especially with a video game that, you know, we're supposed to be doing for fun, I feel like, and I do believe this because I feel like I've been able to live it out a little bit more, is that I'm trying to find ways that I can measure success beyond the wins and losses. Because it is randomizers, there's things that are out of your control. You can play really, really well and still lose a race. And so does that mean that the race was not a success? And does success always mean win? Like, can fun be the success? And I think that's the question that I'm asking myself a lot lately. And the answer has been yes. Is, are you having fun? Are you enjoying the game? Are you enjoying the tournaments that you're playing? And if you're not, why? What would you do different? Like, there are so many tournaments right now, and I feel like there's a case of FOMO, of that feeling of missing out, that when a new tournament comes up or the league comes up or whatever, that you have to join it because I don't want to miss out on this experience. But the question always needs to kind of go back to, like, am I having fun? When I join the league, is it because I'm going to have fun, or is it because I'm going to try to win all the games? And it can be a little bit of both, right? Like, you can want to win and try to win, do your best to win. But if you don't win, does that mean the tournament or the league or whatever you're in wasn't a success? And can you gauge fun beyond wins and losses? Can you lose and still have fun? I don't have all the answers, but I do know that where I'm at right now, very different spot than it was a year ago. I can lose and I can have a good time doing it. I can be disappointed I lost, but I can stream and be with the people in the stream and have a good time and listen to music or listen to the MSU and try to make the best gameplay that I can. And the success of that seed, the success of that race, doesn't necessarily need to be quantified by, did I win or did I lose? For me, it's the competitive nature that I have inside of me that is always wanting to strive to be the best and win at whatever I do. And so, can I have fun and not win? Can you have fun at this game and not win? Wins and losses have to be everything? And that's kind of why I've always envied people that can run this game, not worried about the race aspect, not worried about whether I win or lose. I feel like whenever I play, I'm always having to race. I can't just do a seed on its own. And I'm trying to turn that around and try to change my perspective a little bit and say, no, I can just do this because it's fun and because I enjoy it. And I enjoy the people that are hanging out in the streams that are making it fun regardless of the outcome. So I think where I'm at, I'm just trying to have fun. I just want to have a good time. Like, I kind of want to put away all the baggage of what bullshit comes with wins and losses and tournament grinding and just see if I can continue to go with this upward momentum that I have of just enjoying playing the game. I did a couple of co-op retros practices with my teammate, and it was fun. Like, I just had so much fun, and it kind of reminded me, like, I don't really care whether we win week 4 with this mode or not. We're just having a blast playing this game. And I think that's what's most important. Are you having fun? So can you turn the knob from success equals win to success equals I'm having a good time? Because we don't get anything from this game. You get one tournament with SGL where you get a bit of cash if you win it. Everything else, you get the exact same thing as you do winning or losing, and that's nothing. So can you enjoy the time you're spending playing the game? That's what I'm hoping for me and for everyone else that's listening. All right, enough of me. Let's get to Oro. Again, I think a lot of where my thoughts and feelings are can be expressed in this conversation that I have with Oro. And Oro isn't racing as much anymore. And they're kind of reevaluating, you know, the game and how they want to approach the game. And, you know, we're going to hear their story. But it has me thinking, like, am I having fun? Are we having fun doing this? Because that should be the ultimate goal. And I think the takeaway from this conversation coming up with Oro is that. Are we having a good time? Can we have a good time doing this game? And do wins and losses necessarily matter? Yeah, enough of me talking about the conversation. Let's get to it. Here's Oro. All right, so Oro, you, I believe I know some of your story. I know around the time you started playing the game, but I felt like you brought yourself to my community like very early on and have just been super awesome and are like a moderator on my channel and all these things. And I just love having you around because you bring so much positivity. And so I'm super excited to hear your story today.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here to talk with you.
It feels like you started with the mentor tournament. Is that right? Did you start playing around that first mentor tournament, or did you start playing earlier than that?
I started playing a little bit like a few months prior to the mentor tournament, but that's when I sort of like dove into, you know, racing on SRL and stuff. Mm-hmm. Was the 2019 mentor tournament.
Yeah, that seems like there's a whole class of people. We talked like with Loyoria and stuff earlier about that class and how good that class has become. But let's talk gaming. Let's go even further back. Let's talk gaming history. What's your gaming history? Were you playing Link to the Past as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Before I was born, my dad had an Atari 5200 with like four games. So I can remember playing that. And then when I was like 3 or 4 years old, we got an NES. And it's just been, that's been my history ever since. It's just Nintendo games.
Mm-hmm. Man, the Atari stuff, I remember, I don't know if it was the 5200. I think it was the was it the 2400 before that?
The 26.
2600. Yeah. So I remember going to my cousin's house and playing like Pitfall and Donkey Kong Jr. and stuff and just being like blown away at like the little joystick and the two buttons I think that it had.
Yeah. The 5200 was the one that had probably one of the worst controllers in console history. It had like a phone dial pad on it.
Oh, wow.
If you can imagine that.
That's hilarious. I don't know if I've ever played that or even seen it. That's crazy. I feel like the 2600 is the one that everyone is probably more familiar with.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, playing those early cartridge games were so much fun. And so it's awesome that you got to be a part of the history of it all, right? Playing that first Nintendo. So what was your experiences? You said you were only like 3 or 4, right? When the first Nintendo came out, or when you first got one?
Yeah. I think the Nintendo came out the same year that I was born. My family got one when I was like 3 or 4. I can like, it's one of my earliest memories is my dad coming home and like coming in through the garage door and saying something about having a Nintendo and just like everyone going nuts. But that's my memory, at least. Who knows how much of that's just, you know, created memories in my mind as I kind of like think about Nintendo over the years.
Sure. It just kind of like implants itself and then it becomes kind of fuzzy, but that the implant is still always there. I remember opening up for Christmas that the Nintendo with the Super Mario and Duck Hunt combo. And it's just like my world was forever change shooting those ducks jumping on Goombas and stuff. So
yeah, we had one of the later ones where it came with Mario Duck Hunt and World Class Track Meet on one cartridge.
That's awesome. Did it have like the pad and everything?
Yep. Oh yeah.
Oh, those are great. Early, I guess, like a DDR dance pads, basically
doing
track and field on these little pads. Those things, the inputs always felt terrible, but I remember having a lot of fun as a kid with those. It's funny to think that Nintendo, even back then, was experimenting with other ways of playing the games, not just the regular controller, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, they got their start they kind of made their transition into video games from being a toy company. So you can see a lot of the toy company DNA in some of their early products and even some of their current stuff.
Sure, sure. But they were always experimenting. I mean, like, it was the robot thing and the Power Glove and, you know.
Power Glove wasn't Nintendo. That was Mattel.
Oh, wasn't?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I might be wrong.
Wow. I did not know that. So where did you go from there? Did you stick with Nintendo as you grew up, or did you kind of move on?
Yeah. So I stuck with Nintendo. I had a SNES and N64. During that generation, I also got a PlayStation. But then after that, I got a GameCube and a Wii, and I skipped the Wii U generation, but now I've got a Switch.
Okay. So what were you playing on SNES, and which of the Nintendos were your favorites?
I mean, I feel like all the obvious ones, but some of the weird ones that I like that I feel don't get a lot of love are Zombies Ate My Neighbors and Vegas Stakes.
I'm not even familiar with that. I played Zombies Ate My Neighbors. That was a fun game, but
Vegas Stakes was like, you know, obviously it's like half like a gambling mini game kind of game, but it also has like these RPG elements where like you're going and talking to people, and like it's really, really weird.
This was on the SNES?
Yeah, and the music's banging.
Huh. Have you worked on the MSU for it?
No.
I've never even heard of this game. This is crazy.
Yeah, I forget who made it. I think it was made by like Squaresoft or some like more major company.
Okay. Okay. So what was your experience with Link to the Past? Was that one of your favorites? I know you're also really into Metroid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for some reason, I just have a bit of a memory blank as far as playing Link to the Past when it was like current, because most of my memory is of replaying it on the GBA version. I thought for some reason that I never beat the original game, but I actually have, I still have my original cartridge, and I booted up when I got into Rando, and I saw, okay, I've got the gold sword, I've got 18 hearts, I've got silvers, I probably beat the game.
That's awesome. That's crazy you still have it. Do you still have your old systems as well?
No, I've got eBay replacements.
Okay. Which Nintendo system is your favorite?
That is really tough. It's probably the SNES.
Yeah. The catalog is just huge.
Yeah. And it's just that's when there were so many companies making so many good 2D games at like their peak.
Yeah.
And when that design was just, you know, perfected.
Mm-hmm. I think before I started playing Randomizer, I probably would have said N64, because when the Nintendo 64 came out, I was like 16 or 17, and Ocarina of Time and Super Mario 64 were like pretty groundbreaking and kind of like lodged themselves into my memory banks of nostalgia, you know?
Yeah.
But after I've gone back and played those games, it doesn't hit the same way that like the SNES games hit, because I don't know, like the Link to the Past and Metroid and Super Mario World have aged like a fine wine. Whereas like,
absolutely,
Ocarina of Time, it's good. I don't want to take anything away from it, but its controls are rough, and it's just, you know what I mean? Like, it was revolutionary.
You can see the
seams. Yeah, totally. And so, a SNES is just such a good system. Where did the love for Metroid come from? Was it Super Metroid?
I mean, I played the original Metroid. I didn't own it, but I had a friend that owned it that, you know, I went and played at his house all the time. you know, I was a fan of the Metroid series, but actually kind of like my start that really got me into it was the Smash Brothers series. Because I kind of just fell in love with the playstyle of Samus in Super Smash Brothers 64. And then kind of, you know, it worked its way backwards where, you know, Metroid kind of became my favorite game series from the character being my preferred just play style.
That's funny. So then you go backwards and start playing the other games and like, oh, wait, I really actually love these games.
Yeah. And another thing, I've been following as a spectator the Super Metroid speedrun like since it started. So I've always been like really in, I've never been into actually playing it because it's just, I can't get that too much into it, but I've always been, you know, watching it since like, you know, 2002 or so.
You were watching speedruns in 2002?
Yeah. When I got on, you know, the college LAN, I had, you know, I was able to download everything from SDA archives. And so I was just on there refreshing whatever the latest VHS uploads were.
That's awesome. That's crazy. So you've been into the idea of speedrunning from the get-go, it feels like, because it doesn't really feel like speedrunning became a thing until the 2000s or late 90s, early 2000s, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It was definitely like niche. And I kind of lurked in a lot of forums. I didn't really like interact or participate that much. I don't know. It was cool.
Did you have any interest in doing into getting into the speed run of it?
I tried to get into, I mean, I probably went about it the completely wrong way and like set myself up for failure. But like I tried with an emulator in, you know, it was probably ZSNES with a keyboard, just trying to learn the tricks in Super Metroid, like one room at a time. And just like, I didn't even get to Kraid and was just like miserable.
I played on a controller or on a keyboard. That just sounds miserable on its own.
Yeah. It was just like, I was like really wanted to, but it was like, I was in college. I didn't have my SNES. I didn't have a way to actually play the game.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. So when did you then discover like Twitch or maybe YouTube Let's Plays, or what was your introduction to like live streaming?
So I actually was also watching Let's Plays, you know, back in like the 2000s, you know, the early 2000s as well, before where, YouTube though?
Yeah, like because YouTube obviously helped make that a more common thing, but where were you on the internet watching these?
Google Video, back before Google bought YouTube, was one place.
Oh, okay.
And I think Vimeo is still around.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were.
Are they that old? Vimeo is that old? Wow.
Yeah. And plus, people would just compress the hell out of it into a WMV and you'd have like a 20 megabyte video file that looked like a postage stamp. But
right. Yeah. Because sharing videos in the early internet days was not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess going into the whole Smash Brothers thing, this in like 2005, 2006, the Smash Brothers scene online basically revolved around what was called DC++, which is basically IRC with a bunch of file transfer stuff built in. So you could, everyone would chat and share videos of tournament matches. And this was like before there was any other way to get these videos around.
Wow. Were you competitive then? Were you attempting to be competitive at all in Smash?
Oh, yeah. That was from like 2003 until like 2005, 2006. That was my life. Was competitive. Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. And all with Samus?
Yes. I dabbled with Sheik sometimes, but primarily Samus.
I haven't played Smash in a while. What was it about Samus that you dug?
I don't know. She's just kind of she's an interesting character because she's very heavy, but she's very floaty. She's got very little like wind down lag at the end of her moves, but she doesn't have great follow-ups, so I don't know, it's just kind of like she just occupies this weird space in Melee where she's kind of good but kind of not, and she has a lot of little tricks that you got to learn rather than
I get that.
Yeah,
So tell me about the competitive nature. What was it like in the early 2000s? Because it's not like it is now, right? Where you can, there's so many different online ways of playing against opponents and everything's so easily organized because the internet is more fleshed out. In 2003 to 2005, you said, I mean, yeah, it's still the wild, wild west. Really?
Oh yeah. I mean, like you played with whoever was within an hour drive, whether you liked them or not. That's if they were good, you'd play with them.
Is that what it was? You would just kind of have like a forum where you'd like meet up with people and kind of,
yeah, we'd meet up on Smashboards or chat on AIM.
Wow. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Man, that's something I haven't thought about in a long time. Yeah. Those early AIM days too. Man, well, here's what I love, Oro, is you and I are older and experienced a lot of these things that are just like waves of nostalgia for me that I just have not thought about in so long. I mean, those early AOL, you know, dial-up days and, you know, the AOL Instant Messenger, and as a teenager, just like messaging my friends and stuff,
leaving away messages and like leaving song lyrics or whatever. And
yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, music sharing obviously was a very big one too in those early days with like Napster and LimeWire and things like that. So it was like, again, the Wild West, just trying to figure out like, how do I get my hands on all this music? Nowadays you have Spotify and Apple Music and all these different, you know, Pandora music apps that can, you have every song at your fingertip, but back then it's downloading the songs and burning them onto CDs, because that's how we consumed our music.
I burned so many CDs over the years.
Yeah, and people make playlists again nowadays, but I remember putting, like, trying to figure out the best, you know, like, I was like 56 minutes of music on one disc and trying to put together, like, the best mix of
I was songs. Ahead of the curve. I got an MP3 CD player, which you would store them as MP3s on the CD.
Yeah.
So it was like, I don't know, like 7 hours of music or something.
Yeah. That blew my mind when
that was a terrible quality. And it was like the first version. So if you even looked at it funny, it would buffer for 30 seconds.
man, again, the nostalgia is just waving over me. It's great.
You were driving around, you'd go over a bump and
CD music skips. Would skip. Yep, totally. Yeah. I mean, I'm old enough to remember cassette tapes and like losing my cassette tapes because the Walkman would eat them and just kind of being like, shit out of luck, you know? And then CDs obviously had the same problem with like you're talking about with like the bumps, but then if it gets too scratched or someone drops your CD or something like that, and you're like, I'm out of $20. That CD was so expensive. So being able to download all that music illegally from the internet was something. So why did you stop playing competitive Melee? And you said in 2005?
Yeah. I just got to be too much for me and I wasn't having fun anymore. Mm. I felt like, compared to the scene, I was getting less competitive, and I don't know. I tried to find a place in the scene that wasn't being competitive, and I tried to like be a tournament organizer.
Oh, okay.
But that didn't really fit with my personality or way of doing things. I'm not organized, so.
Sure, I understand that. It takes a certain type of personality to run a tournament, for sure. So what did you move on to after that? Were you kind of like done with competitive games at that point, or?
Yeah, I pretty much kind of just played games casually from then.
Did you move on to Rando? Did you move on to anything else like PC gaming or like something on the Xbox or anything else? Or was it more just like, I'm just going to play stuff for fun because I enjoy it?
The most recent like major released game that like multiplayer game that I got into was Splatoon 2.
Oh, okay. So recent. That's very recent.
Yeah.
All right. So you said you were watching early Let's Plays pre-YouTube. Did that change when like Justin TV showed up? Were you around for the early Twitch days?
No, I never was on the early Twitch or early Justin TV. I think I got on Twitch in like 2014. So
do you remember what brought you there? Was it something from like YouTube or?
It was the Melee documentary.
Oh, okay. What's this?
So in 2014, someone released a documentary about like the golden years of Melee, which was like the period when I played.
Mm-hmm.
And like a few years after then as well. And it like really like it both reinvigorated the scene because a whole bunch of kids suddenly were like, wow, this is so cool. And wanted to get into it and started going to tournaments. But also a whole bunch of old heads like me were like, wow, this is cool. I remember the good old days. And, you know, it's been 9 or 10 years. I guess I can go play Melee again.
Mm-hmm. And so that brought you to Twitch then?
Yeah. So I started, you know, going to local stuff and watching Melee stuff on Twitch. And eventually I was just like, oh, I'm going to actually, you know, register an account and actually chat because that's what people are doing on this. Mm-hmm. I'm used to just like kind of passively sitting back and consuming, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're the same age as me. We didn't have interactive television, right? Like you didn't interact with the stuff that you're watching. It's just there. And a whole new generation is growing up in a completely different way where you are getting exactly what you want and you're able to interact with the people that you're watching. So how did you find Rando then?
Through Splatoon 2. The player Trinex, I played Splatoon 2 with him, and he kind of would talk about Rando as well when we were playing. And I liked Link to the Past. I loved, you know, dashing around in that game. And I kind of just started watching it. And the more I started watching it, I was like, wow, it's just like cool how the logic works and like how, oh, that can go there. And, you know, just like all these ways that they can, that this mystery kind of is created and then unraveled. It was really cool to me. So I, like everything, I got into watching it, but not playing it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's understandable. So Trinex, you just randomly met through playing Splatoon.
Yeah, he was on this, from the Something Awful forums. And so we were on the Nintendo Discord for that, community.
Okay, so I know that there's other people in the community that have come from Something Awful. I've never really heard of Something Awful Discord channel, or what is it?
No, Something Awful was an internet comedy site that was founded in 2001, and it had a forum attached to it. And it was sort of like, I mean, it was basically the Reddit of, you know, 2001. It was where like all the funny internet jokes came from, right. You know, in the early 2000s.
Okay.
So like it's where all your base came from. It's where, I don't know, trying to remember some of the older ones.
If it's old, it's probably from there is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so these forums are lasting all the way up until, are they still going? Is it a place that people still hang out?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's actually kind of gone through just like a recent like change of hands where like the original site owner was kind of a dick and becoming more of a dick as he got older.
Sure. Okay.
And just he was completely distanced from the actual community that was using the forum. So one of the moderators took over and it's kind of got like a little bit of a new life where it was kind of getting stale earlier.
Mm-hmm. And people are still using forums in 2022?
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't used a forum in like, gosh, at least 5 or 6 years. The last one I joined because of, you know, like all the different ways of sharing information has changed. Discord obviously being a big one.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I've shrunk my forum viewing from like 90% of my online time to, you know, 5% of my time.
Yeah. Okay. So there was a Nintendo section of the forum.
Yeah. There was a Discord specifically offshoot for the forum Nintendo. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And that's where the group of Splatoon players you're playing with came from. So one of them happened to be Trinex over there, who's a pretty prominent member of the community here, who's actually going to be on the show this season.
Yeah, great dude.
Yeah, totally. He introduced you to the game, and you start watching. Do you remember who you're watching early on?
I was watching whatever was on the Speed Gaming 2018 main tournament, the fall tournament.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anyone at all. I was just watching whatever videos came up in the playlist.
Yeah, for sure. And that was the who's who, right, of 2018, because a lot of big names were in that tournament.
Yeah, definitely. Like a lot of them are either like names that are big now or names that like people that are new don't know, but the names that are big now would be like, oh.
Right, right. A lot of them have retired and gone on to do other things, and then a lot of them were brand new, myself included, and have kind of risen up in the ranks, I guess you could say. So how long are you watching before you start at least attempting to play the game?
For quite a while. I think it was like in the spring, so it was like that I first tried to play a Rando Seed, when it was like the previous like September that I started hearing about it and watching it.
Mm-hmm. What made you delay so long? Like you're watching it for quite a while. Did you not have an itch to attempt a seat?
I don't think it was. It's just that's more my nature is to kind of be. I like to kind of watch the outcome of speedruns, but I don't like, you know. I'm not a grinder. I don't like going into the process of repeatedly running rooms to get them perfect. I like watching someone that's already done that.
Sure.
But I don't know, just the puzzle aspect of Link to the Past Randomizer intrigued me so much. And also the randomness and the gambling and just everything about it just kind of overcame my sort of natural inertia.
Right. Like you're resisting the urge to even want to really play because it's not necessarily in your nature. And the game is just too good that you can't handle it anymore. And you got to pick it up. So yeah. How long are you playing before you do your first race?
Not too long. I do my first couple seeds just by myself offline. Just like rolled a seed completely that no one else ran. And then there was on Something Awful, they had like an async going on for a while. And so I would participate in that every week for a little while. I was always at the bottom or near the bottom.
Sure.
And then in like, I think like June or July of probably June of 2019, I got onto SRL and started trying to do just Triforce Hunt races at first because I was too scared to race like in full open mode.
Sure. Were you having luck finding Triforce Hunt races?
Yeah. People were doing them back then.
Wow. Yeah. It definitely, you know, post ladder, post race time, things were a lot different. Racing on
SRL. You could ping for any mode at that time and you'd get one or two people interested.
Yeah, it was way different. Now everyone's just waiting to do the ladder or to do their tournament race. Occasionally you'll get pings in the Discord for like the dailies or a random pickup race here and there, but it's, you know, was way different in 2019.
Or like the random pings that come an hour after ladder, they're just like, I just missed ladder. Anyone want to do entrance?
Yeah, totally. So how did you find the mentor tournament and when did that happen and what kind of got you to join that?
It was purely by luck. It was like I think the final week that the mentor tournaments signups were going on, and someone in the Something Awful Rando Discord said, "Oh, you know, I guess I'm going to be a mentor. I'm going to try to be a mentor in the mentor tournament." And I was like, "Wait, what are you talking about? What's the mentor tournament?" Because like I'm a new player. I like tournaments, and I'm into this game. So suddenly I'm like, "Wow, this sounds like it's exactly up my alley." And I get more information. I joined the Go Mode podcast Discord, and they still hadn't reached the 32 person cap. I think they were just like at 30 people at the point time or something.
Right. And this is the first class, right? This is the first time they're running the mentor tournament. I think Loyora was in the second class.
That's right.
So this is 2018. Who's in this class? Do you remember?
So it was Amerith and Blackwax and Verts and Tyler Salt, and Bumrush Blitz, Lady Box Thief, the Daddy Gamers. Those are the ones that come to mind. But you know, there's 32 people that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I don't need
I'm sorry if you're listening and I.
But it feels like you kind of found a group of people in that class that kind of became your kind of like core friend group.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like the people that stuck around in the Go Mode community after that year, really like the class of 2019, I don't know. It really kind of just kind of became like its own kind of group, feels like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very similar to what happened in 2020 with the 40 bunks. It felt like you and Amerith and a few others kind of became.
Yeah, and that was an even bigger scale in 2020.
Right, yeah. But you kind of, I mean, you and Amerith have kind of gone hand in hand since that tournament. I associate the two of you a lot, you know, a lot because you do a lot of things together, but also you ended up teaming together in the league. So,
yeah, it's kind of funny. It, like most things in life, I think me and Amerith teamed just because of happenstance. You know, season two of League was starting up and I really wanted to participate. But I didn't have a team, and I just kind of posted in the Something Awful Discord. It's like, hey, does anyone want to make a league team? And I knew Amerith was a new runner like me, and that was about it. But she said that she would, and you know, luckily we became really good friends after that.
Yeah. So Amerith was also hanging out in the Something Awful Discord.
Yeah. I think she was invited by someone that was, I don't think she was actually on the forum.
Oh, okay. I see. So shortly after the mentor tournament, I think League Season 2 starts, right?
Right.
Okay. And you joined
that was the next year. League Season 1 starts shortly after the mentor tournament.
Oh, okay. League Season 1. Okay.
And I didn't participate in that because I didn't hear about it until it was like halfway through.
I mean, it was a very small group that first season
but you know, I watched a whole bunch of the league matches and got super into watching it. I just loved the idea of it so much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously a fan of it too. So do you attempt to qualify for tournaments? Like where are you at as far as racing goes now that you've done the mentor tournament? Well, before that, tell me about your experience with the mentor tournament.
Honestly, I think there were a lot of problems with the structure of the mentor tournament in 2019 that were fixed in 2020.
Sure.
And I was kind of the bearer of the you know, kind of bad part of that structure, in that I went 0-2 in the tournament and was out.
So you don't really get much mentoring in the mentor tournament.
So it was like, you know, just getting my feet wet, and it's like, all right, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of goes against the idea of what a mentor tournament should be, of like, no, get into the modes and play a bunch and get a lot of learning in. Yeah.
Yeah. But the Swiss system that goes into the four brackets now is so good. So they've really addressed that and then some since then.
Yeah.
It's just too bad that I had to go 0-2.
Right. So you didn't get much of an experience then in that first mentor tournament.
Yeah. I mean, I had more mentored practice races than I had in the tournament.
Wow.
Much more.
Wow. That's interesting. I did not know that. So where do you go from there? Are you entering tournaments? Are you doing lots of dailies?
When the mentor tournament was finishing up, the second Plando tournament was just getting started.
Is that the one that still hasn't finished?
No, that was the third one.
Oh, okay.
This is the second one.
Okay.
This is the one that Dante won by Dante won it by putting the lamp in GT Big Chest right after it was the very first patch where that was possible because you could beat Eastern without the lamp.
I see. So the Plando tournament, you didn't actually Plando a whole seed, right? Can you tell me what you do?
No, you get, it depends on like what the rules or what the mode are, but you get like one or two plants that you secretly give to the seed roller. And the seed roller makes sure that first that you and your opponent don't pick the same items. If you do, then that item's locked out and you can't repick it the next time. So if we both try to put the boots I put the boot somewhere easy, you put the boot somewhere hard, then we conflict on the boots and we can't place the boots in the next round of picks.
I see.
And then if there's a logic bomb, like say I try to put the flute in Tower of Hera and you put the lamp in Paradox Cave, that's not a direct conflict, but you know, that's not going to roll.
Right.
So then it doesn't lock out either of the items, but it goes back and says repick. So you can resubmit the same picks again, but you might keep bombing like that.
Get lucked out, yeah. I see. So how did that go? I've never played in a Plando. I've heard things about the way it was ran that haven't been the most positive. Like, that's my only real takeaway from the Plano tournament. I don't even know who's in charge of it, but how did that go?
Yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of the way that the second Plano tourney was ran. But I think it's an interesting take on the randomizer, where it's just kind of like, it turns it into a partial information game where each player has information that the other player doesn't. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how that can change things. I don't think that the Plando concept has been explored properly by the community.
Right. Because what you just explained sounds really cool. I actually like the sound of that. But I, for some reason, have never joined any of those. Again, because of word of mouth on how the tournaments were ran. How'd you do in that tournament?
I went 0-6.
Okay, so tournament's not starting great for you. 0-2 in the Mentor tournament, 0-6 in the Plano tournament. But you're still relatively new, right? This is early in your rando days.
Yeah, this is like kind of my first 6 months of competitive rando.
Yeah, that's hard to do. That's hard to do and just jump in and be successful right away.
And the Plando's tough because, you know, when you're still learning the logic, people can put some pretty tricky things that you just, as a noob, don't realize that.
Right. Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Or there's like skips where like, oh, it was a big thing was in that Plando tournament too, was who knew how to skip Aga to get Hammer and Pyramid Fairy.
Oh, with a bomb, like the bomb dupe or whatever.
Yeah, like who was able to pull that off became like a skill to have by the people that were good.
Yeah, I can also see why this tournament would be awful at the same time.
It's a mixed bag. I think that it needed to be balanced better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense. So again, so this is the end of 2019-ish, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so going into 2020, the pandemic happens and everyone's stuck at home playing video games. Are you playing more rando then?
Oh, yeah. It consumes me then.
Yeah. And that's when season two was? Is that right?
Yeah.
Season two and three were in 2020, I believe. I think they ran twice that year. So season two sign-up start. You, Amerith, and who was the third that first season?
Hobo Jim.
Okay. Were you able to sign up in the first 42 seconds of season two or whatever it was?
No, Amerith was in charge of signing us up, and she took a little bit too long trying to get, she was trying to upload our banner and wasn't able to get it attached.
So news goes out that League signed up, I think we went to 32 teams or so. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, it was 32, and then you expanded to 64, I think.
So you were excited to join the league, and then a whole bunch of teams that wanted to join after less than a minute weren't able to join. I'm guessing you were pretty bummed.
Yeah. So I don't know. I was super upset because I don't know. I was looking like I got into league. I got into rando at the same time that league was starting, and like league was the first sort of rando event that like really sparked my imagination. I don't know. It was very disappointing that when I wasn't able to get into the first 32 teams.
Yeah, that sucked. I was not expecting that to happen.
Like I didn't know how like, because I know from an admin standpoint, like what are you going to do?
Yeah, we thought doubling the size of the league would be fine, right? We went from 16 to 32. That seems fine. And then, signups happened in 47 seconds, and we were full. And it was like, we were freaking out. Like, what do we do? Like, all these people want to play, and we had, like, a voice call, and, I was the only admin at the time, too, and it was weird. So we do expand.
There was a call for like Ridley Dragon to maybe do a challenge league.
Right. Yeah. Like we didn't know what to do. It was a crazy time. So, we expanded from what we prepared for of 32 teams to 64. I didn't even know what we were doing. and you're able to get in. Tell me about your experience in the first season of the league.
I don't remember it that much. I think I was in the same group as the Spoilers, and we had them for Spoiler Week and got absolutely trounced. Yeah,
that's understandable. I think one of the things about season two that was, you know, something that we hadn't anticipated and we figured out in season three and four was like the separation of the Invitational and the Open, because it was mixing everybody in one group. And when you do that, you have so many varied skill levels that some of, you know, you and Amerith and Hobo Jim were new. And here you are playing against, you know, one of the best teams.
Always kind of talk about like the origins of the league and how, I don't know, it was kind of humble, but like, I guess inadvertently, the people that you were friends with that you invited to the first season are sort of a who's who of Rando now. Like that.
I would say
that, you know, like 80% of the people that participated in season one are still heavy hitters today. And if they're not, it's because they don't play anymore.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, season two was a mess, but it was a fun mess, and it kind of like, you know, helped grow the league. And I feel like everyone had fun. Did you enjoy it? Was it what you were expecting? Like when you had this excitement to join the league?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was a great time.
So you actually had a pretty successful season that year, went 4-2. Your team ended up 5-9, but again, you had like kind of Rando retired in your division. You had the Spoilers in your division. You had some really, I like Big Boots in your division. Those are three really tough teams right there. The Canadians. Yeah. So main tournament doesn't happen in 2020, but season three happens for the league. And I forgot to mention your name is Swedish Rubbers, by the way, which was an excellent name. Can you explain why Swedish Rubbers?
So there was a Swedish website that sold like video game console parts. And they had, you know, replacement rubbers to replace like the D-pad and buttons for your SNES controllers. They were just like the best on the market back then. So I had a set and Amerith had a set, and we're just like, hey, let's call ourselves the Swedish Rubbers. It kinda, you know, it sounds funny.
Yeah, it is. Sounds funny. It's hilarious. And it was really good. So you run it back for season three. What was your expectations kind of going into season three? Is now I believe this was the first season of the Invitational in the Open. And you're now more experienced as well.
Yeah, I don't think I didn't have any expectations as far as at that point trying to make it into the Invitational. Just like I hadn't been, you know, I was still fairly new to like cross keys and stuff like that at the time. So, I, you know, like I felt comfortable in an open 7-7 seed, but like the more advanced modes in the league were still kind of, I don't know, a little sketchy at that point.
Sure. So, you know, season one, you went 4-2, had a really good season. Season two, or season three for you, was a little bit tougher. You went 2-3, and your team finished 4-10. But again, record isn't as important as if you're enjoying what you're doing, right? And at this point, you're still enjoying playing Rando in the league?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you joined as a Restream mod, right?
No, I was not a mod. I was just a Restreamer.
Oh, just a Restreamer. Okay. But it felt like you took some leadership, and maybe it's because you were doing more Restreaming. Season three, I feel like the league, specifically the league channels that you and Amerith kind of oversaw, really got a bump in quality.
I just volunteered for every Restream that I could. I was working from home. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, it was something that was very easy to do while I was, you know, otherwise on my laptop, because you really, as a Restreamer, don't need to pay attention to the actual match. You just have to make sure that, you know, all the bars are green.
Right. Yeah. You let everyone else do the stuff. You just kind of push the buttons and make sure it all works. But having said that, a good Restream for me when I was a part of the league was super important. Like, I'm very meticulous in how I like things done. Which is like a good thing and also a bad thing. And so like, I didn't want to put on shit Restreams. Like, I wanted the league Restreams to like stand up to like the stuff that Speed Gaming did. But at the same time, I didn't know how to do Restreams. So it felt like you and Amerith, and I think with the help of Sigma as well, kind of turned it into the quality of Restream that it is.
Yeah, I think Amerith has to take a lot of the credit for that. I've just kind of been a little bit of a technical support to her.
Yeah. Do you write code and stuff for a living? Is that what you do? Are you a...
Yeah, I'm a programmer.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Because I see you have things here and there kind of that have helped like the league grow. Like in season 4, when Sigma and I worked on the website, a lot of the back end Restream and stuff, I feel like you kind of helped with, again, to make make Restreams work even better.
Yeah, I like kind of had this like project in the back of my mind that like I've sort of been starting and stopping and not really getting anywhere of kind of turning the script that I wrote for League into just like its own sort of like jank Restreaming package that makes it easy for anyone just to set up a Restream.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a tough motivation. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Like starting, like having the idea and then like finishing it off can be tough because there's life happens, right? Like you get busy or whatever. But so you mentioned earlier that, you know, like the admin role wasn't really, or tournament organizer wasn't really in your personality. Has that continued on as you've been a part of the community? Cause you're not like on the council and you're not like an admin or necessarily a mod for a lot of like tournaments or anything, but it does feel like you're everywhere.
Yeah. I guess like anytime someone asks me if I want some sort of, you know, authority or position or responsibility, especially if there's responsibility attached, I'm going to turn it down. But I guess like I'm just kind of chilling in a lot of people's chats, so just a lot of people just make me their mod or make me one of their mods.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, it when it's like that, I'm kind of chill. But like, you know, I've been approached and asked by some communities to be part of their admin team. I don't know if I should name names, but it was just, I don't know. I turned it down because like I kind of see myself as just like a natural shit poster, and like having, you know, a little star or sword next to my name in a big community like that, you know, with like, you know, more than 10 people watching, just didn't seem like it would fit with me, because I would just say something dumb and it would.
Do you really see yourself as a shit poster? Because I see you everywhere and I'd never have thought of you as a shit poster at all.
I totally see myself as a shit poster.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
I guess I don't know. Maybe we have a different definition of shit poster.
Yeah. Well, so what's your definition? What is a shit poster to you?
Just someone that posts the dumb things that come to their mind.
Hmm. See, I think of a shit poster of someone who's more of a troublemaker, who like has very strong opinions and is like constantly either.
See, I would say that's a shit talker. That's the difference. Okay. I would say that's a shit talker, not a shit poster.
Okay. All right. So yeah, we're definitely seeing it in a different light. Yeah, I guess I could see you then as a shit poster. You're definitely not a shit talker, that's for sure. So you go into season 4, still in the open, but you have a hell of a season. You go from Swedish Rubbers to one of my favorite names, Zelda and Chill, with an excellent logo, by the way. And you have a really good season, going 9-5, making the playoffs.
Yeah, we had a very fortunate season. I would say a lot of breaks went our way. A lot of 50-50s where it could have gone either way went our way.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Hobo Jim's gone. I don't know if he left the community or stopped playing the game or whatever, but you bring in Darity and Oro. You had a hell of a season, 8-3. Holy shit.
Yeah, it was a pretty good... I feel like I really, really overperformed that season.
I mean, this. I don't know. You and Marith and you and Darity take 2-0 over the long shots. You have a win over the Hovering Sick Kids. You win over But We're Still Buddies, which was the former Invitational team.
That was a 7-second win, which is one of those things where I say, hey, that's, you know... The ball
could go either
bounced
way.
Bounced on the rim and it happened to go in the net.
Yeah. I mean, that's all that matters, right? It doesn't really matter it just matters if it does. So you make it to this conference semifinals against JKLOL, who I feel like you're all friends with.
Oh, totally. That was a fun set.
Yeah, and the winner of this seed gets qualified for the Invitational for season 5. What was it like going into that until last the semifinals there?
I definitely saw it as the end of the road already. Like, I don't know. I saw it every single. I don't know. The entire. It's hard to say because it really felt like our league season was going to end like every single week, and it just kind of kept on extending by one more week. But it really felt like we were not going to get past JKLOL.
Yeah, so it looks like Amerith lost to Jesse. You got a win over Kaysden. And then Darity lost to Leoria, and you ended up losing the rematch to Kaysden. But
yeah,
fun series.
It was actually the last race was kind of a bummer because, I don't know, it was swordless, which is one of my favorite modes nowadays. But I kind of had a bad death to blind. And then in the rematch, I went and I beat him with the Cane of Samaria. And out of frustration, I just started spamming the Cane of Samaria as the item was dropping. Mm-hmm. And I guess I did whatever Ancilla stuff they do in low percent to delete the heart containers because the crystal didn't come.
Oh, no. Oh, man, that is rough.
So I had to reset my game and I lost like 30 minutes of progress. And like I already had a boss death, so... It was just, you know, when
I'm at
the bottom of a pit and it's like, this is like an hour into the seed. I've still got like 30 or 40 minutes until Kaysden finishes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's always the worst feeling when you know that you've lost because something major has happened like that. And do I continue? I've given up.
It's like something equally major would have to happen to Kaysden. And I kept playing on the chance that something major happened to his game, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's rough. So
it was on Restream, so I kind of had to keep playing, I felt.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, I understand that. So where does the future hold for you? Where are you going from here? Because I haven't seen you after the end of season 4. I haven't seen you racing a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been struggling with my mental health. My entire life, but it's really been kind of a insidious spiral since the pandemic.
Sure.
Where just like I've been stuck in my own home and stuck in my own head and like stuck in my own depression and, you know, just kind of like some days just losing the will to like get out of bed and like do anything. And
right.
So, you know, I've been kind of working through that. Mostly this year.
I'm glad to hear that you're working through it because that's way more important than the silly game is making sure, attempting to get yourself healthy mentally. Because, I mean, as you've heard me talk about on the podcast, it's super important to me. And I'm glad to hear that you're attempting to work on it. So hopefully there's ways that I can encourage you and others can encourage you and find ways to help you to get through this. So do you think you're done playing Rando for a while then?
No, it seems like I'm going to sign up for the next season of League.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Okay, so Zelda and Chill is going to be coming back?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm actually very glad to hear that. So do you feel like you're in a better space now that you've had some time away to play again in October?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just going to be, I don't know, I don't know, it's not the same as you where it's like the disappointment of losing that gets to me.
Sure.
It's just that, like, I don't know, my house is a mess and it really needs to get clean and I shouldn't be playing video games with such a messy house. It's basically, you know, I just feel the weight of all these things that I'm not doing and not getting done.
I completely understand it. It feels like you're putting the video game over stuff that maybe should have more of a priority, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's balance, right? It's trying to find the balance between that because you do have to take time to do things that you would enjoy. And I know that you enjoy Rando.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what I've done is I've gone through a reset and, you know, hopefully I'll have a, you know, more balanced approach to the game. I think I have a healthy expectation as far as, you know, how much I don't plan on doing a lot of practice. So I have a healthy expectation as far as how my performance is going to go.
Sure.
So, you know.
Yeah, I think that's really good. Have you been playing other games besides Rando in this like downtime?
Not a whole lot. I played Metroid Dread when that came out. That was amazing.
I know how much of a Metroid fan you are. I just have never really played a lot of Metroid, so it doesn't have that same sort of like nostalgia for me. Have you gotten into SMZ3 at all?
I've played Two Seeds, but the Super Metroid side is just, I don't know, it. Both the fact that I'm not very good at Super Metroid and it's possible to soft lock and there's like all these little gotchas, and it's also a very long speed run. Like, that's one of the things about Link to the Past Randomizer that I could get into, was the fact that like once you're good at it, a normal seed's like an hour and a half to 2 hours at worst.
Yeah, for sure. That was one of the biggest draws for me, is that I don't have to spend, you know, usually more than 2 hours playing the game. And then I got into Cross Keys a few years later and all of that went out the window. But like the length of some of the other randomizers has always been a bit daunting. Do you see yourself moving into any other roles or any other parts of the community? Like, have you ever had a desire to do like the council work or anything like that?
Not the council, but I kind of see like myself in the wanting to have the same sort of role at that Sigma said, as being a facilitator. You know, I would like to build something that someone else then runs.
Yeah, I get that 100%, because you know, that's where I am with the league now, where I'm more excited to play the league this season than I have any other season, because I have nothing else attached to it other than playing.
Yeah.
So I totally understand. All right. So we got a couple questions from the Discord that I like to ask everyone when I get a chance. And you know, the Tilts question is going to come as
the pressure's
well.
On for a good answer to that one.
It doesn't have to be a good answer. It just has to be your answer. I think whatever your answer is going to be great. But who are some of the people that you look up to in the community?
I mean, I look up to, you know, the community organizers, the people like Sailor Nep, who was the organizer of the Something Awful Randomizer community, and Timp, who's the organizer of Go Mode, and CJ, who's sort of the leader of 40 Bonks. And, you know, you've kind of built the league, and now you're building the 216 podcast. And, you know, Sinak is also just like an amazing guy that, like, it's hard to imagine what the randomizer scene would look like without Sinak.
Totally.
I think it would be like 10 people, because that's the amount of seeds we'd be able to roll.
Yeah. The work that Sinak has done is, without question, probably the most important aspect in the last couple of years of Rando, for sure. Did you ever have a moment where you said, huh, I'm actually good at this game? And if you had, has the feeling lasted?
I don't know. I guess I'm going to answer that a different way. I'm going to say it feels really cool when I do Icebreaker that I can do it a bit faster than most people do. Like that kind of thing just kind of feels slick. I don't finish the seed faster, but like little things like that, I feel like I can do better than the average person.
Sure. Yeah. I wish I could do Icebreaker faster. I feel like my Icebreaker just keeps getting worse and worse. What's your saltiest moment in Rando?
That's a tough one. Saltiest, probably that match that I was talking about earlier against Kaysden, where I had both the boss death and the time loss due to a crash that I caused.
I need to go back and check that out. That sounds bananas. All right, before the tilt question, do you have a most memorable race? And was it because of the seed or the situation?
Most memorable race? No, I don't think so.
Yeah. It feels like there's the level, like me, I love the competition. Like the competition, like really fuels me when I play this game, but it doesn't feel like you have that same sort of drive. Like you, it feels like you enjoy the game for what it is, not necessarily because we're racing. Would you say fair?
It's definitely complicated because I do enjoy the competition and the racing, but I kind of enjoy it more as a spectator. I think it's more interesting. Like I didn't participate in the Cross Keys tournament at all. And I think it's been so interesting just week by week hearing who's paired up against who and what everyone's record is. And
yeah,
I don't know. It's some, a lot of stuff I like just to kind of observe from the outside like that.
Sure. Yeah, I totally get it. All right. So the question that's, you know, I ask everyone, how do you handle tilt?
Well, I guess I kind of look at it like as poker, where a lot of it's going to be dependent on probabilities. And, you know, you can make the mathematically correct decision and still lose in poker. And that's just a reality that you have to get used to. And I think it's something that to get really good at poker, you have to like really kind of like completely like zen like absorb that concept that like losing is a part of the process. Because in poker, you can't expect to win every hand. That's impossible.
Right.
If you just raise every single time, eventually someone's going to have pocket aces and take you down. And I kind of see racing and randomizer like that. Like, yeah, like you can improve your execution and improve your routing and improve your chances. But it's also there's, you know, I think one of the good things about the game, especially in an open 7-7, is that there is luck to it. I think one of the things that you have to think about is like you're bringing like in determining who's going to win the game. You're bringing 40% to the equation. Your opponent brings 40% to the equation and the randomizer brings 20% to the equation. So your total effect is less than 50%. You know, your opponent, you're playing against the randomizer and your opponent. So, you know, you kind of, I don't know, just kind of, I wish I could explain it better.
I get what you're saying. Understand your situation and know that a lot of it is out of your control, right?
And just accept that. And like, you know, because like if you get mad that I found the ocarina and it took me to Pendant Mire where there was nothing, whereas my opponent did Smith Chain because they didn't find the flute and got the TR medallion. It's like that happens. Move on. Next hand.
I feel like that's great advice and something that I feel like I've been learning as well. So yeah. Oro, I just want you to know you're one of my favorite people and I love having you in the community and having you in my streams helps me not get as tilted. I can't say that I don't get tilted, but having you there and like being encouraging and just being the person that you are helps me. And I love having you in the community, in my chat and just who you are. I think you're awesome. So thank you so much for doing the show.
I always try to just be a balancing force when just whenever, just to be on the balancing side of the equation, whether something's getting too bad or too good.
Sure. And you shit post when I need to be shit talk to you as well. And I like that. So it's a good balance, as you say. Thank you so much for doing the show. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Big shout outs again to Oro for coming on the show. Really loved hearing their story, how there's a lot of similarities between the two of us and how there's a lot of differences too. I just love getting people's perspective on the game and just their life in general. Oro talked a little bit about, you know, working on their mental health, and on the show I've talked about that quite a bit. And if you're struggling with that, reach out to someone that you know in the Discord, someone in real life. Find ways to help because, you know, mental health is so important and is so overlooked. So just know that you're cared about and loved, and we'll have people around even here. Drop me a DM and we could chat because, you know, mental health is the most important. And this game can sometimes wreck it if, again, we're focused not so much on wins and losses. So, loved having Oro on the show. Let me know what you think in the Discord. We're going to be back Monday with Matt7898. And Matt7898 has a different perspective than Oro, than a lot of different runners. Matt's like a straightforward, no bullshit type of dude. Will tell it just like it is. And he's very, very good at the game. So again, a completely different perspective. And that's why I love doing 216. By the way, he's really funny too. So excited for you to check that out. That will be on Monday. This Saturday, again, we have the 216 Weekly, Saturday at noon Eastern. We're doing Potpourri this week, so kind of a fun ladder mode. Check that out. I'll be restreaming that on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/fearagent_. Can join the Discord. 216pod.com has a link to that, as well as my Twitch and the YouTube. You can subscribe to the show anywhere, Apple, Spotify. Leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts really helps the show out. I've neglected this, but we do have 6 ratings on there, so that's cool. 4 reviews, and I'm going to read them right now. Double the podcast, double the fun. That's from Lucian Greeth. I believe that's in reference to Go Mode. Sam Cluck 777 says, Fear Agent is so friendly and chummy. He's like the best person to host a podcast about interviewing ALTTPR folks. Can't wait for the next episode. Thank you for that review. Never been referred to as chummy, but I'll take it. I like it. Dr. Earworm says, so excited for more content about this community. Glad to have Doc a part of this community as well. And then Hawk59 said, Fear has created a podcast here that not only gives an amazing insight into some of the biggest names in the ALTTPR community that I'm just now getting the pleasure of knowing, but makes it an amazing listen as well. The conversational style is perfect. Give this a listen, whether you play Link to the Past or not. It's really just a great show. Thanks, Fear. Keep it up. Thank you, Hawk, for that awesome review. Really appreciate the reviews. Again, Apple Podcasts is the place to leave the reviews if you can. Just help the show get out there a little bit more. So again, thanks for listening. Can't thank you all enough for the love the show has received in the past couple of months. And I really appreciate it. All right, Matt 7898 on Monday. See you next week.